Good afternoon, Michelle Searcy, registration number 38683 for the defendant Darren Dozier. May it please the court, this appeal, this case is about the Fourth Amendment. What is the parameters of the Fourth Amendment and what are the parameters of the exceptions to the Fourth Amendment, particularly the emergency exception? The people have encouraged the court to apply to widen the emergency exception when there are children involved, and I've found no case law supporting that position. And certainly the Children's Code doesn't support that position. In fact, the Children's Code in section 19.1.12 provides a procedure for obtaining a warrant for the protection of children. In this case, the child, DD's mother, arrived at school smelling of alcohol. Somebody called that in, and a police officer was sent to the home to investigate. The child at question.
Can I interrupt you just at the start? Because it was a little bit unclear to me. Who is it clear from the record who the mother was picking up at the school? Was it just the boy or was it both children?
That's a good question. I wasn't sure on that either. The record specifically said that the mother arrived to pick up DD. There was no mention of KD, and there was I think she was around 12, and DD was around almost 9. So I don't know that they would have been in the same school, but it's not clear from the record.
Thank you. Sorry.
To put it in a nutshell. Nonetheless, when the police officer arrived, DD answered the door. He was in good spirits. He didn't appear to be distressed in any manner. He was asked if his mother was at home. He indicated that she was, and that she was in a bedroom or another room of the home. When the police officer asked DD to get his mother, he...
Did that take place, what you're just referring to, did that take place before or after the policeman was in the house?
Thank you. Actually, that took place from the police officer's testimony. The police officer asked DD if he could enter the house, and the reason that he gave in court was that it was a cold November day and he didn't want to make DD, you know, put on his coat and get dressed and go stand out in the cold. So he asked if he could step in the house. Now, arguably, the search started there because the Fourth Amendment case law says that you cannot cross the threshold without a warrant or a valid exception, and well-recognized exception to the warrant requirement. So, but nonetheless, even if, assuming arguendo, that the search did not occur then, that he simply stood in the threshold to prevent the child from being exposed to the elements, there's no question that the search began when the child, and I'm not sure from the record, because as I read it, the child demurred to whether he would go get it. The officer never testified that he said, no way, I'm not doing it, or refused, that he just didn't do it when he was asked. So the officer took it upon himself to then go seek out the mother. And that is when he walked into the bedroom, which was trashed. From the testimony, it doesn't appear that there was anything amiss in the living room that would cause concern. But when he walked into the bedroom, it was trashed, it smelled of alcohol, and both parents were sleeping.
And the child declined declined to get his parents when requested to do so. At that point, doesn't the officer have a reason to think that either the parents aren't there, or perhaps the parent who had been, whether some indication of alcohol in her breath, might not be in a condition that she could take care of a minor child? Wasn't that a proper basis for him then to consider that there's at least a colorable basis for an emergency entrance?
I think, well, first, DD had stated to the officer that the mother was home. So outside of that, I mean, maybe the officer didn't believe him. He didn't testify. So I can't really speak to what's not in the record.
Should an officer just sort of turn on his heels once told that the parent is home?
I don't think that it's necessary that the officer turn on his heels and leave. However, at that point, he had seen the child that the report was called in about. He saw that he wasn't distressed in any way. At that point, he could have called in backup and obtained a warrant to search the home to find the parents.
He could have gotten a warrant by reporting to a magistrate that there was a child in the house, and he said his mother's sleeping in the bedroom, and I'm not quite sure about that. You think that's enough to get a warrant?
Well, if it's not enough to get a warrant, how is it enough to, I mean, I know you're asking the questions, but I don't see how, if you don't have enough information for a magistrate to issue a warrant, how do you have enough information to determine that an exception to the Fourth Amendment applies?
Exigent circumstances that he's looking into, because he just isn't sure what the situation entails.
Well,
isn't the emergency doctrine an exception to the requirement that you get a warrant and that you don't have to have probable cause to believe that a crime is committed, rather to protect someone's safety?
Absolutely. You do not need probable cause that a crime has been committed. What you need is two things: an immediate crisis, and the police assistance would be helpful. The question in this case is it an immediate crisis? The police officer receives a report that a mother picked up a child smelling of alcohol. Obviously, that creates a concern that's valid for an investigation. So the police officer goes to investigate. He locates the child safely at home. The child's watching TV, is not distressed, shows no signs of distress. He invites the officer to pet his dog. You know, where's the immediate crisis?
How does the officer know until he sees the mother or finds out where she is? I mean, he doesn't know where the mother is. He doesn't know where the other child is. I mean, you may or may not be right looking back in hindsight, but if you're an officer on the spot and all you know is that there was an allegedly drunk mother who picked her kid up from school, how do you know without seeing the mother?
Well, I think it was reasonable for the officer to want to speak to the mother, but the issue is, did that concern rise to the level of an emergency that would obviate the need for a warrant? I don't think that it does, because in other cases where the emergency exception was applied, there was more information for a police officer to go on to think that there could be somebody in distress. I'd also like to address the issue of the other child. I think it's telling that the officer didn't testify that I needed to find out where KD was, the other child. The officer immediately wanted to find the mother. So if there's an argument that nobody knew where KD was and that she was at risk, it seems to me that a prudent officer would want to locate that child first and foremost to make sure that she was safe, if there was a concern about her safety, before searching the home for the mother.
Why wouldn't it be reasonable for the policeman to say, I'd like to ask the mother that, where's your mom?
And the officer did ask, where's your mom?
The child responded. She's in the bedroom, so I want to talk to her. But how does he know she's in the bedroom? I mean, if an 8-year-old is home by himself, isn't that almost per se a neglected child?
If an 8-year-old is home by himself?
No parents there?
I think it depends on the circumstances.
And didn't the officer have a reason? Couldn't he have said to himself, I don't know if the mother's there. I really want to speak to her. The child doesn't get the mother. He says, she's in the bedroom. Go get her. I'm not going to get her. What is the officer to do at that point?
Get a warrant.
By the time okay.
I mean, that's what the Fourth Amendment says, is that the Fourth Amendment protects against warrantless search and seizure unless a well-recognized exception applies. And the emergency exception just does not apply in this case. There was no imminent risk to somebody's physical safety. The child whose safety was concerned had been located and found safe. Certainly, the officer had every reason to want to speak with the mother, but having a reason to speak with the mother is not the same as having an emergency situation where we must search the house to find the mother before somebody's life is endangered. And a child of nearly 9 years old at home alone may be of concern. At home with a parent sleeping in the next room, not so much. And there's nothing that says for sure that the mother was drunk. There wasn't a report that the mother was drunk, simply that she smelled of alcohol when she picked up the child, which certainly would trigger mandatory reporting on behalf of anybody at the school. But the mother was home. The child hadn't lied. The officer had no reason to think that the child would lie. The child didn't seem upset in any way. He simply... And another thing that's very interesting about his testimony is he was asked about his training and what happens when you have somebody uncooperative on a child welfare check. And he was told by the person training him, don't worry about the Fourth Amendment. Just make sure the kid's okay. Well, in this case, he didn't worry about the Fourth Amendment, and he made sure that the child was okay. So, therefore, the exigent circumstances doctrine does not apply. There is no established exception to the warrant requirement, as shown in the record of this case. Therefore, I would ask that the court reverse Mr. Dozier's conviction as fruit of the poisonous tree, given that all the evidence subsequently obtained and used against Mr. Dozier was based on the illegal search and seizure. Thank I will you. Reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We've got a little over 3 minutes.
Sorry, I'm trying to move it down. It's not moving down. I'll just begin. Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Jennifer L. Ward, number 38342, and I represent the people of the state of Colorado in this action. I'm going to begin today by framing the immediate crisis that officer faced when he arrived at the Dozier's house. He had a report that a mother picked her child or children. The record is unclear on that. I agree with opposing counsel. That the mother picked the child up and she was drunk. And she left the school with the child or children drunk.
Smelling of alcohol.
Drunk, Your Honor. In the record, during the hearing, I'm sorry.
Actually, I'd like to hear answer.
If you'll give me 1 second. In the record, during the hearing, I believe it's page 17. I'm mistaken. It's page 19, lines 1-7. The officer said, I was told she was smelling of alcohol. She was intoxicated. She was driving, is what was given to me by the radio. Someone at that school not only thought that she was smelling of alcohol, but thought that she was intoxicated. And I think that puts a little different spin on the officer's, what the knowledge that the officer had when he approached that door that evening. Now it's November. It's about 5 o'clock, the officer testified. So it's getting dark, but it's not completely dark, he says, more like sunset. He knocks on the door, arguably says Denver police, and an 8-year-old boy opens that door. He says, hi, I'm Officer So-and-so. I'm from the Denver Police Department. May I come in? He did ask to come into the house. And he said he asked to come
in. What basis did he have to ask to come into the house at that point?
To check the welfare of DD and KD. DD opened the door. KD was not present.
Since it's the entry that's going to be the triggering event, why couldn't he at that point have said, could you please have one of your parents come out and speak to me before he entered?
Well, he testified during the hearing that it was cold out. And backing up a little bit, the touchstone of the Fourth Amendment is reasonableness. And in November, with an 8-year-old boy not dressed for the weather, it's not unreasonable for the officer to say, can I stand in your entryway and ask you, and then ask you to go get your mother, rather than asking the child to step out or leaving the door open to the elements. I don't think it's unreasonable in Colorado in November to ask an officer, for an officer to ask to do that.
Cold weather exception.
That could be, actually, cold weather if it's hypothermia is an emergency exception. So here we have drunk mother picks up children or child again, and the officer arrives. 8-year-old boy answers the door. The officer steps in and asks the 8-year-old boy, "Is your mother home?" And the 8-year-old boy gestures, or the officer testified in the record that he couldn't recall if the boy said she's in there or she gestured, but in some way that 8-year-old boy let this officer know that the mother was in the other room. And then he says, "Can you go get your mom?" And the 8-year-old boy made it perfectly clear, the officer testified, made it perfectly clear that he wasn't going in that room. So the officer asks again, "Will you get your mother?" The 8-year-old boy says, or gives the officer the impression, "No." Third time, "Will you please go get your mother?" 8-year-old boy, again, will not enter the room.
So is that when the exigent circumstance begins?
I think the exigency began when the officer was told that a drunk mother was driving her children around.
So now it's sort of cumulating.
It is cumulating.
Are there cases that support a cumulative doctrine of exigency? I know I kind of smile, yeah. But I wonder
yes,
about that.
I'd say yes and no, Your Honor. I mean, I haven't seen the term cumulative exigency, but in many of the cases cited in both my brief and the opposing counsel's brief, you get officers that get a 911 call and show up, and then they see more and more and more and more, or they get a very generic call for a domestic dispute, and when the door opens, there's the victim with an ice pack on her head. You get things like that. So in a way, it is cumulative. The initial phone call, and by the way, this, we don't know, it's not in the record who the source is, but it wasn't an anonymous, you know, they never referred to it as anonymous.
From the school.
School official,
yeah,
yes. Yes, sir.
I mean, you get cases where they go in, they open the door, and then they see there's broken glass, furniture, this and that becomes the exigent circumstance.
Yes.
The difference here is that he was already in the house when this exigent circumstance
But again,
up.
It was cold outside and reasonableness.
Okay, go ahead, I'm sorry.
It is called an unreasonable search, and reasonableness dictates that, you know, the officer's not going to ask a little boy to step outside in the cold. And in fact, if he asked him to step outside, would he have been removing him from the home? I don't know how that would have played out either. That's something that's not really fleshed out on the record. Returning to the immediacy. So you've got the drunken mother, children, officer in the house, asks one time, "Please get your mother," two times, "Please get your mother," three times, "Please get your mother," four times, "Please get your mother." The child won't get his mother. Katie is not in the house that the officer knows of. During this whole time, during the knock, no adult has poked their head around a doorway or yelled out, "Was that a knock at the door?" No one has come to say, "I hear voices, who are you talking to?" There's nothing like that going on, and Katie is still unaccounted for. So the officer goes into the bedroom, and that's when he finds the parents passed out and makes the decision to remove Dee Dee from the premises. It's only later when the victim is confronted by her mother-in-law, who is haranguing her and bullying her about why she's not at work, that in the, you know, that she pulls her pants down and shows these branding marks that the defendant put on her. Third-degree burns required a skin graft. It's only then that happens. Now, exigent, for the emergency exception, you have to have an emergency. And there has to be a probability that the officer's assistance could be helpful in alleviating this crisis. I believe that the emergency started when the phone call came in, and as the judge pointed out, could be cumulative. But at some point, the officer is presented with a situation where he's been tasked to check on the welfare of two children, Katie and Dee Dee. He's found Dee Dee, arguably unsupervised, but he's found Dee Dee is still missing. So the officer went in the bedroom to look for someone who could tell him, one, is anybody home? Two, where's KD?
The officer testified to this, that he was also looking for the sister?
I believe he did, but I don't have that marked in my record, but I believe he did. He did testify that he was dispatched looking for two children and that he knew the whole time he was there he was looking for two children. So yes, he did.
Let me ask you a question that's been troubling me a little bit. It's yes. Not mentioned or argued in either of the briefs, but how does the exclusionary rule play into this? I mean, what if the holding was that this was a violation of the Fourth Amendment, didn't meet the exigent circumstances exception? I mean, what we're talking about here is the mother coming out, And she's talking to the mother-in-law, not to the policeman.
Yes, there's no...
And she drops her trousers and shows the burn on her rear end, and that's what leads to everything. I mean, how does the exclusionary rule play into this whole thing, if at all?
The exclusionary rule wouldn't play in at all, okay. Your Honor. And I apologize to the court. It was an oversight on my part not to argue attenuation. The record supports it. The judge talks about it. I can give you the cite if you'd like. But no, that was an oversight on my part.
Thank you.
Just a minute on that, because I'm not sure I quite followed it.
Sure.
Why would it be excluded if it were determined that the entry was unlawful under the Fourth Amendment?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question, sir?
As I understand it, you were suggesting the exclusionary rule wouldn't exclude the evidence of showing the burn marks and so on, even if it were an unlawful entry?
Because it's too attenuated from the unlawful entry. Mm-hmm. If this court were to conclude that the entry was unlawful, the actual showing of the burns came way after. And okay. By the way, the site for that information, the attenuation, is February 4th, 2008. It's the hearing transcript, page 83, lines 5 through 13. And again,
but you made an alternative finding on that?
I'm sorry?
You made an alternative finding that,
yes,
even if it wasn't
for... it was a she, okay, but she, yes, sorry. Yes, it was a she. Judge Lemon made an alternative, okay, finding on that point.
Thank you, counsel.
If the court has no other questions for me, dramatic pause. If the court has no other questions for me, then the people would ask that you affirm the conviction. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Board. Seriously, you've got a little over 3 minutes for a rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. There's a couple of things I would like to address. First, the argument that the cornerstone of the Fourth Amendment is reasonableness. That is true, but it has also been held that a warrantless search of a home without an exception is per se unreasonable. So to say that it's cold outside, so it's reasonable for the officer to enter the home does not fit with Fourth Amendment case law. The entry was per se unreasonable, and I did not intend in any way to concede that the initial entry was okay. I do not concede that point. The initial entry was still the beginning of a search, and it was still unreasonable without a warrant. What was the officer to do? I don't have the answer to that, but we're talking about 5 o'clock in the evening, right? So there's nothing in the record as to when school lets out, so I can't speak to that, but it seems as though there's a considerable lapse of time between the report of the mother picking the child up and the officer showing up, which goes against the argument that there was an immediate crisis from the moment that that call came in.
How do we know that one way or the other from the record? And if we don't know it, whose burden is that?
That's why I didn't mention it earlier, because we frankly don't know. But nonetheless, I mean, it just hit me in my mind, because she mentioned that it was 5 o'clock in the evening, which is true, and it is dark in November at 5 o'clock in the evening, and there is evidence in the record that it was cold. Nonetheless, there's still no cold weather exception to the warrant requirement. I'd like to also address the fact that KD was still unaccounted for. In the record, on the February 4th hearing, the prosecutor asks Officer Gurevich, I think is the way you pronounce his name, asks him, were you concerned about KD as well? And he says, well, yeah, I was concerned about all the kids, but I really felt like I needed to talk to the mother to see what she was like. So I just don't think that KD's whereabouts is a basis for an emergency exception. There's no indication in the record that there was a call to the police concerning her safety. And the crux of the call was that DD was picked up from school by his mother smelling of alcohol. Whether she was intoxicated or not, she smelled of alcohol. That's clear from the record. And then I'd also like to address the issue of the child being unsupervised. I think I think there's a real clear distinction between a two-year-old unsupervised in a room alone and a child who's nearly 9 years old unsupervised in a room alone. And as for the exclusionary rule, it was an oversight in my brief. Certainly, we would argue that the exclusionary rule applies to any evidence that was obtained pursuant to an illegal search.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel for your arguments. Case will stand submitted. We will issue an opinion in due course. That